6 minutes after 10 o'clock. Nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate, Pam Colleen joins us on the program. Pam, how are you?
I'm great, Tom. How are you doing today?
I am excellent. Let me tell you, over the long weekend, I made some vitamin D. I released small amounts of adrenaline, and I recalibrated my sleep clock and consumed animal fats.
I love it.
A very productive long weekend at the cottage.
You're a healthy guy, Tom. You're a better man for it.
Pam, let me ask you, when we talk about, I sent you an interesting article a little while ago about research into hormone disruptors, I guess we can say. When
right.
most people think about hormones, we think about our sex hormones, that women have estrogen and men have testosterone. And even though I know both produce both, I mean, I have a, you know, I'm high in testosterone, you're high in estrogen. But what does our hormone system do besides the sex hormones? What are our hormones responsible for in our body?
Well, basically, you know, most people do associate the hormones with fertility, and that's very true, and that's obviously one of the most prevalent things that we can consider here. But there are other hormones involved, including DHEA and progesterone, all sorts of different other hormones, countless neurotransmitters as well that are all very much related to hormonal production. So it's a very complex system, and for me to really understand the fundamentals of how you make these systems work properly, I had to break it down into a grade 5 level for myself and, you know, when I'm teaching people. Suzanne Summers, who has written a lot on hormones, unfortunately is missing a few pieces to the puzzle. And I hope that what I do takes it to the next level, because people right now are listening to her advice in terms of, like what you mentioned, in terms of getting enough testosterone or estrogen or progesterone, DHEA, whatever the case may be, by using either supplements or creams or sprays. And these, unfortunately, don't necessarily address the underlying problems as to why there may be deficiencies in our body's ability to produce these hormones in the first place. She doesn't understand that very, very crucial part of the equation.
Now, if my body produces them, can I change or alter the quantity or the quality of the hormones produced simply by what I eat?
The body should have its own innate intelligence as to how much to produce and when
right.
throughout the day, you know, so that you have energy in the morning when you wake up, so that you sleep properly at night. I mean, there's all sorts of different built-in intelligences that the body will tap into in order to make sure that your body's producing these at an optimal level at the optimal time in the day. But what's unfortunately going on today is that we are not supporting our hormonal structure with the proper foods. And this is crucial to the solution to the problem. It is not running around, going to doctors and getting these hormonal creams, whether or not these are synthetic creams or supplements or natural, it doesn't really matter. We still need to get to the crux of the problem.
Now, could the hormones be described almost as the chemical signaling system of the body? I mean, you know, we talk about when your muscles fire, an electrical impulse goes down the nerves. But I mean, your body, for it to know, for instance, there are hormones that help us regulate sleep. There are hormones that help us regulate our appetite. There are hormones that help us regulate sex drive. I guess they're almost like the chemical signal our body uses to do a lot of things.
Yeah, they're a chemical signal. And, you know, like I said, it's a very complex system. But what happens is when one key thing happens in the body, will disrupt, it will cause a cascade of imbalances with the hormones. Understand how the adrenal glands are supposed to work they tend to test people for disease states. They don't understand that the adrenals can run in an insufficient state or a burnout state. And it would really do our medical system, our entire healthcare system, a huge justice by training doctors into identifying adrenal burnout or adrenal insufficiency. And unfortunately, this is not what's happening today.
All right, so what are the adrenal glands responsible for? Obviously, with the name, I think we're probably going to get adrenaline from there.
Absolutely. Adrenaline and cortisol are the stress hormones that it produces. The adrenal glands also are very, very instrumental in controlling hormones. You know, they actually help produce hormones. It's not just the testes. It's not just the ovaries. It's actually the adrenal glands. So when the adrenal glands are weak, of course, that will adversely affect your body's production of things like testosterone and estrogen and progesterone and DHEA and so on. So we must consider the health of the adrenal glands when we're talking about the hormones. And so what I do is I study the work of Dr. Hans Selye, and he was the foremost researcher on the area of adrenal glands. And he went to McGill. He was at McGill University, and he basically really understood. He really got to the bottom line as to how the adrenal glands are supposed to work. And one of the other key functions that he was able to identify, and others in biochemistry and so on, is that the adrenal glands actually control your body's levels of minerals. And this is pivotal. This is crucial when understanding how the thyroid, the adrenals, blood sugar, and so on are supposed to be working. If we do not get the minerals in balance by supporting the adrenal glands, then the hormone structure will break down.
So how do I make sure my adrenal glands, is that where I start, or will you start? You started that the blood sugar level, make sure that is under control, and will that take care of the adrenal glands, or what comes first?
Well, yes, that's one of the systems that needs to be identified. So proper blood sugar control will take the stress off the adrenal glands and allow them to work more at a more optimal level. Another thing people do, and we'll talk about some of the nutrients that the adrenal glands actually need in a second, but I have to say this. The human body should be in a parasympathetic state most of the time. We work best when we're in a state of resting and digesting. And so pushing those adrenal glands into a very, very harsh state of activity, stress, and so on, that actually wears down your batteries, if you want to call your adrenal glands the batteries of the body. And so we really need to respect that we should be in a state of resting and digesting in order to, again, support the adrenals. So aside from resting and digesting, being in a parasympathetic state, we need to feed the adrenal glands the food that best supports these particular glands. And so that would be things like, butter, cod liver oil, animal fats in general. And the reason why animal fats are crucial for supporting the adrenal glands is because they contain things like cholesterol, which support your sex hormones, of course. We need cholesterol as the precursor to form things like testosterone, progesterone, and estrogen. We need vitamin A, which is also found in animal fats, in order for the conversion of those hormones to take place. And unfortunately, because so many people today, millions of people today, are following a low-fat diet, they're simply not getting the precursors to form their hormones at a healthful level.
Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joins us on the program every week. I read this article and I talked about how certain chemicals can disrupt your hormone system. But then I thought, well, you know what? Maybe there's other ways we can disrupt our hormone system. And I thought, because Pam takes such a great interest in this and can break it down for us, I thought she'd be a good one to explain why we have to. You know, we always talk about in our diet, well, I need to get so much fat in my diet, or I need to get so much carbohydrates, or I need to get so much protein. But when we examine how the body works, it's interesting that, you know, someone like Pam can explain, well, this is why you need this, and this is how our body works, and this is, you know, the endocrine system which produces these hormones. This is why we need it. This is not just some secondary system that you're like, well, I guess I need hormones. It's
but
like,
you know,
no,
Tom,
this is what you
really
need.
Important point, because with all the hormone mimickers out there in society today, whether they come from the plastics or from household products, whatever the case may be, these are hormone mimickers, and they tend to mimic estrogen. And that's one of the key terms we hear so much in the media, is these estrogen mimickers. And they are a problem, and they do interfere with your body's hormonal system. But unfortunately, when we hear this in the media and we blame the toxins, these chemicals, and they are a problem, I'm not denying that, what happens is we take our eye off the target, and you know, we still run around feeling like we're going crazy because we feel like there's something wrong with our hormones. But what we're not looking at is the diet and the foods that best support our hormones. So I don't know if I made myself very clear there, but it's very important to not just blame the chemicals that we're being exposed to in the environment. They do interrupt our hormones, yes, but the diet, just like you're saying, Tom, is something we have to consider as well.
Pam Killeen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. Quick break. I'll come back, talk a little bit more about hormones with Pam Killeen. And maybe if you have a question about eating healthy for your hormones, Pam is more than willing to entertain your questions this morning. 905-688-2582, 1-877-610-2582, #610 on the Bell Mobility Network. Email McConnell at astral.com. This is News Talk 610 CKTB. 19 minutes after 10 o'clock. My name's Tom McConnell. I'm joined by Pam Killeen, nutritional consultant, and we're talking about hormones. And Pam, when we look at, let's start with women who age. And there comes a time when a woman diminishes the amount of estrogen or progesterone that they produce. And doctors prescribe hormone replacement therapy for them to reduce symptoms caused by a reduction in estrogen and progesterone. Is that the way to go? Is that the proper, like, if your body requires it and you're not making it, well, then I'll just give you whatever the treatment is. I don't know if it's a cream or a pill or whatever you take.
That's not the way I would go, for sure. I mean, with hormones, there are some risks involved, including increasing your risk of developing cancer. So, you know, hormones to me, whether these hormones are natural or synthetic, are really just not the answer, because you're still not identifying why the hormones are not producing at a proper level in the first place.
Could it just be a function of age, though? I mean, when we look at women don't produce, there comes a certain point in time where nature has said, well, we don't want women to reproduce anymore.
Right, and this is not a bad thing, though. You see,
when exactly.
It's not a bad thing. And when you study primitive cultures, for example, and you study the females in that primitive culture, they age very gracefully. They don't have menopause, right? They don't experience hot flashes. They're very, very healthy. Even younger women, they don't have things like PMS. These things just didn't exist and do not exist in very primitive cultures where they haven't been touched by modernized, westernized foods. And so we know that PMS and menopause are not normal. Unfortunately, they are being normalized, right, or medicalized. And so, unfortunately, women are suffering. They're having hot flashes. They're having perimenopause. They're having all sorts of issues, even with infertility, and they're turning to hormones as the answer. But unfortunately, they're not dealing with the underlying problems why the hormones are a mess in the first place. And that goes back to the adrenal glands, and something I touched on earlier, where the adrenals need to be strong. They need to be, you know, working properly in order to help produce some of these hormones, even at lower levels when we're approaching menopause and beyond. And when the adrenals are not working properly, minerals fall out of balance. Heavy metals begin to accumulate in the body. And these heavy metals actually add insult to injury, because the heavy metal accumulation then interferes with hormone production even more. And so this ties into a very common problem where the thyroid is concerned. And many millions of women throughout North America are taking thyroid medication.
Yes.
And men too. And really, it's actually not a problem with the thyroid gland at all. It's more of a problem to do with the adrenal glands. And subsequent to that, the accumulation of heavy metals in the body, which interfere with the body's ability to use the chemicals produced from the thyroid gland properly. And I can't emphasize this enough, because I have people who come to me all the time saying, I have a thyroid problem, right? And it's not a thyroid problem. It's an adrenal problem. It's a blood sugar problem. It's a heavy metal issue. And fortunately, this can be turned around. But the problem with the thyroid medications is it actually makes the situation much, much worse.
Okay. I know a lot of people who have taken thyroid medication.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, I think I had a friend who had their thyroid removed. And mm-hmm. it's like, well, I mean, you can't do anything about that. I mean, but there are a lot of people who are, oh, my thyroid's out of whack. So the doctor will give them thyroid medication. But as you said, that just makes it worse in the long term.
Yeah, keep in mind, your thyroid and your adrenal glands operate like a gas pedal and a brake pedal.
Okay.
So when the thyroid is underactive, the adrenals are going to be overactive, right? So you visualize that, your gas and brake pedal.
All right.
That's the most common scenario. The more rare or less common scenario, of course, is that the thyroid moves into a hyperactive state, which is hyperthyroidism, when the adrenals are really, really underactive.
So most times we see hypothyroidism?
Most times we say we see hypo or low thyroid, and these are the symptoms where you see people who tend to gain weight easily. They also have cold hands and cold feet. These are very, very common symptoms. And Dr. Brodo Barnes, he developed a thermometer, a temperature way to test for hypothyroidism by testing your body temperature in the morning as you first wake up. And if your body temperature is low for somewhere in the vicinity of three mornings in a row, then this is a good sign that people might have the low thyroid. But again, this is not an excuse to run to your doctor and go on thyroid medication for the rest of your life. This is not really going to solve the problem. When people start taking thyroid medications, they typically come back and complain 2 months into it that, you know, something is still not right. They just still don't feel quite right.
So the thyroid, I like that. The thyroid and the adrenal glands balance each other out. One is a gas pedal, one is a brake. But if you take away one, then you have no, and I mean, you replace it with a pill. And I mean, people are on, you know, with thyroid problems, they'll, I think people are on those pills forever, aren't they?
Well, yeah, they can be. But typically they complain. They don't feel quite right on the thyroid medication. So some of them do stop. But if they stay on the medication, unfortunately, they just never feel quite right the rest of their lives. I've talked to people who've been on those medications for years, and they feel really, really off.
All right.
And nobody deserves to feel off. Everybody deserves to feel happy, energized, sleep well at night. They deserve to have these feelings. But, you know, most people today are settling for running at about 50% capacity.
All right. Before we go away to break, I want to talk about men when we come back. But let's focus still on women. So women who want to take hormone replacement therapy, what would you say to them? And what would your alternative be then as a way to make sure that their hormone system, even as they age, is functioning properly?
Well, I would say they really need to start increasing their intake of animal fat and cholesterol because it's these foods that actually best support your hormones, your entire nervous system, for that matter. So, most women, unfortunately, were the ones who really fell victim to this low-fat lie. And this is one of the reasons why, of course, women tend to go to doctors more complaining about things like depression, stress. And then, unfortunately, they're the ones that are more likely to go on things like Prozac. And when really you need to look at what is not nourishing the system, what is not supporting the system in the first place so that she can feel, wholesome and healthy and so on. So, it's the animal fats, Tom, that really we need to keep going back to that. And, this is an important forum for me to teach people about the importance of animal fats, because the second you turn on mainstream media, what are they telling you? Animal fats and cholesterol join the dark side and that they're bad for you. But this is the worst advice they could be passing on to the public.
How long would it take a typical, let's say a client of yours came in and she complained of a situation like this, and you're like, okay, we got to fix what you're not getting into you so your body can properly produce the hormones in the right amount that's age appropriate for you.
Mm-hmm.
How long does it normally take to reset their body's, I guess for lack of a better term, hormonal clock?
That's
or
right,
hormonal
yeah.
production?
No, everybody I work with works at a different level. Their ages are different. The level of sickness is different. Their level of compliance is different. But generally speaking, I mean, I need at least usually a year, maybe even 2 years, to help reset the clock, if you want to call it that. In other words, I need about a year or 2 years to restore the biochemistry in an individual. But usually within 3 months, working hard on the program, they can start to feel positive changes in their bodies. I'm not saying within 3 months they're going to be 100% better. That would be unrealistic. But at least they're starting to feel better.
And do you have you had examples of women who've undergone this and who even later on in life? Because I know in our audience, there's certainly more older women than younger women, but probably a lot of women who are on hormone replacement therapy, thinking that this is normal to reduce these symptoms of their of menopause.
Oh no, I see it a lot. Even in my classes, I see people showing up and they're taking a lot of these types of creams, and they've read Suzanne Summers and so on. And you know, there's just some things that I wish I could sit down with Suzanne Summers and explain to her, that she's missing the point on some of these issues, that duct taping the problem with these sprays, creams, and supplements is really potentially going to cause more problems in the end, because they have not identified why their hormones are out of whack in the first place. And to do that, we must address the adrenals, we must look at the mineral balance, we must look at heavy metals and so on.
Well, I mean, to put into a car analogy, you can keep putting oil into a leaky car, but eventually you have to fix the leak.
That's right.
Eventually you have to fix the leak where the oil keeps coming out. All right, 10:29 is our time. Pam Colleen's our guest here, nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate. When we come back, I'll talk to her about hormones and men and the importance of, tell me about how we talk about testosterone being, you know, the man hormone. How important is it, and how do we get more of it? Should we be getting more of it? I'm assuming I should get more testosterone. How do I naturally produce more testosterone so I don't have to go to a cream or a pill or start shooting myself up with something? We'll talk about that when we come back. News is next. I'm Tom McConnell here on News Talk 610 CKTB.
Mobility Network.
10:35 is our time. Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant. Healthy living advocate. The nutritional consultant is her part. I added on healthy living advocate, I think. She isn't a healthy living advocate, but I just put that on the back of her business card. She joins us on Tuesdays talking how to eat healthier. Clarissa in Toronto, good morning.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine.
You have a question or something for Pam?
Yeah, I'd like to. Pam?
Yes.
How do you spell your last name?
It's K-I-L-L-E-N.
K-I-L-L-E-N.
E-N. Yes.
And Tom, did you say she had a book out?
She's written a couple books. Pam, what books have you written?
I co-authored The Great Bird Flu Hoax with Dr. Mercola back in 2006. The Great Bird Flu Hoax.
Bird flu.
Yes, about the bird flu hoax. We should have written about the swine flu hoax of last year, because it was even a bigger hoax.
Is this about birds?
No. It has a lot to do with
nutrition.
Agriculture, as a matter of fact.
And what's your other...
Pam, I call to congratulate you. Your words are music to my ears.
Thank you.
Just absolutely brilliant, because I've been on to what you were talking about for quite a while, and I'm a senior, and I'm in great shape. I feel good, and I think good.
Good.
But that's why I called, but I wanted to get one of your books.
The other book, Pam, is Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, right?
Yeah, Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, and I do only just touch on some of these issues in the book. Really, I'd say the most of the content in the book focuses on the nutritional components.
That's what I want to have, yeah, because, you know, I eat everything. You know, I don't have any particular foods that I must eat to stay slim, you know. I don't go by that.
Do you eat lots of butter and liver and red meat and eggs?
Exactly. Yeah.
Good for you.
Not a lot. Everything within reason, moderation.
But do you eat 3 square meals a day?
Yes, I do. I eat very good, but small amounts, so I'm not overweight and I'm not underweight. You know, we think too much in our society about looking like models, you know, anorexic models.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's terrible. So it's wonderful to hear you on this radio station, on this program. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Clarice. Take care. Pam, let me ask you, we talked about women and hormones, and if there's anything else you want to say, let me know at the end of the program. But let me ask you about men and hormones. I have this one hormone that has been driving almost all of my actions since I've been born, and it's called testosterone. And maybe to men, this is the problem with men, that we have testosterone. It's an aggressive hormone. It you know, makes us nuts sometimes. But as I get older, everyone wants to see, we see a certainly a decline in the amount of testosterone that I produce. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Should men just live with it, or is there a way that we should look to naturally increase or balance our testosterone?
Well, you know, what you're saying is just a matter of nature working. And so as we age, these hormones do decrease in quantity. And this is just normal, and this is the way nature has designed it. But unfortunately, what's happening today is, and I get this a lot, young men in their 20s, early 30s, have absolutely no libido at all. And, of course, this is not natural. And I want to talk about how and why this is happening. And it has a lot to do, of course, with this industrially processed food that we are mostly gravitating towards today. There was a doctor by the name of Dr. Francis Pottinger who foreshadowed this problem back in the 1940s. And what he did was he took litters of cats, and he would compare their outcomes, their health outcomes, based on the diets that they were being fed. And just to give you a nutshell, just to give you a Reader's Digest version of what he noticed, was that the cats who were eating their natural foods, that were eating, you know, raw milk, raw liver, for example, that these cats, you know, flourished generation after generation. He didn't see disease, he didn't see infertility in them. He saw healthy cats generations after generations. But when he started manipulating the food, processing the food, then generally what happened was is in three generations, these cats ended up with cancer, with diabetes, and by the fourth generation, these cats were infertile. And this is basically the clarion call. This is the major, major red flag that he, as a researcher, was trying to warn us of with the dangers of a highly processed food diet. And now we are three and four generations into eating a diet that is being mainly focused on processed foods. And what are we seeing? We are seeing at least one couple in six, I've seen numbers as high as one couple in four, where they're having troubles with fertility. I'm seeing young men who come to me who have no libido at the age of 20. You know, this is a serious, serious problem with regards to the degradation of our hormonal structure. And unfortunately, duct taping this problem with supplements and pills and creams is not addressing the core reason why it's happening.
Now, I guess this would fall in line with, they've taken samples of men from around the world, and in more industrialized places such as Europe, we've seen a huge decline in the amount of sperm
that's
being produced by men. And it's a significant decline. And it's not just like, well, they're producing 10% less. It is a huge, and they estimate that it's going down in the United States 1.5% per year, and in Europe about twice that. How do I reverse that? If I'm a guy, if you see men with low libido in their 20s, which I can't even fathom, if you see that, what do you say to them? Or I guess you're like, well, we got to fix you. But is this just another example of how we're getting away from the things that have sustained us, and we're getting into things that we think are making us healthier, but maybe in the short term we think, well, this will be healthier. But in the long term, it's just totally degrading in terms of our ability to reproduce. Every society is, you know, the only way we can survive is the fact that we have to have babies.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and some people, what they're calling this is, and this sounds extreme, I know, but some people, even professionals and doctors that I've spoken with, they call this a genocide, basically. That as people are being blindsided and don't know the truth about nutrition, and they're gravitating to the foods that are deemed to be healthy, and that these foods are actually killing them or making them infertile or giving them chronic diseases or contributing to mental disorders. I mean, my goodness, we are so detached from knowing what the truth is today. That it will be amazing to see if the human race can actually survive this.
So men with low testosterone, is it the same prescription that women who have estrogen or progesterone levels out of whack? Is there a way that we can feed the problem?
Well, yes. The similar answer lies with women and with men. We need to be eating adequate amounts of animal fat and cholesterol in the diet because it's the, like I said earlier, it's the vitamin A that is naturally occurring in the animal fat and the cholesterol that is also there as well that really are responsible for the production of the hormones in the first place. So do not follow a low-fat diet. Do not gravitate towards a high-carbohydrate diet because those foods displace the animal fats. And so 3 square meals a day, get 70% of your calories. If you're of European descent, get 70% of your calories from animal fat. And that should at least provide you with the fuel in order to produce the hormones in the first place. Another thing that happens because we have displaced these nutrient-dense animal foods, we're eating too many plant-based foods. And what that has done is it's actually turned upside down the ratio of zinc to copper in our bodies. And this is, I know this is going to sound really complicated, but this is pivotal when it comes to balancing the hormones. You know, in order for men really thrive on, you know, lots of zinc, and women do too. But in order to produce the testosterone, men also need lots of zinc. And I'm not saying you should run out and take zinc, because taking a supplement like zinc can actually potentially throw off other minerals. But certainly what you want to do is focus on eating zinc-rich foods, and that would mean eating lots of red meat. If you like oysters, enjoy oysters.
Love oysters. That's why they're linked, though, as an aphrodisiac, is it not?
Absolutely.
Yeah. That oysters. All right, before we go to a break, let me get Lynn in Ridgeway. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Tom. I have a question for Pam, please.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. There's two of them, actually. Pam, do you have a book out on menopause right now?
No, I don't have a book. In fact, my book on addiction is called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic. That book was supposed to be about hormones.
Okay.
And I decided not to because I see that the problem is actually more in addiction. And that addiction would be to cheap food and addiction to carbohydrates. And unfortunately, that's really what's leading to this, you know, hormonal chaos.
Okay, my other question. Nuts. You know?
I know. I wish it would be just as simple as taking those types of supplements. You know, it's hit and miss. I would say to somebody, you know, try them for a little while and see if they're working. For some people, it can be dead on. It can really, really work to take a supplement like that.
But I find there's some days you're just, poof, you know, and drained from it.
Yeah.
Diet-wise, is there something particular you would suggest to eat daily?
Well, first of all, you know, stay away from sugar, right? You want to, in order to balance your hormones, you have to do certain things like avoid the foods that disrupt your hormones as well.
Okay.
And so you want to avoid sugar. You want to avoid a high carbohydrate diet, right? So again, all the carbohydrates I'm talking about would be everything from a fine white powder to juice. Fruits, too many fruits and vegetables.
Oh, okay,
and
that's a lot of my diet.
That will really, really mess up your hormones.
Okay.
Soy is also problematic, so you don't want to eat a lot of soy. And soy is actually hidden in a lot of processed foods. So, you know, again, stay away from those middle aisles in the grocery store.
So if you're not doing your nice field green salads and eating all your fruits, what would it be a good replacement for that to be that's not a real heavy meat?
Yeah, you can eat. You can certainly have some salad and some fruit. I just don't like to see people overeat those foods, and that's where, unfortunately, vegetarians or near vegetarians fall into problems.
Right.
But the central focus in every meal should be around animal fat, animal protein, and then maybe some fruits and vegetables. But always focus on eating adequate amounts of protein, and that protein should be fatty. And so, you know, the size of protein should be the size of the back of your hand.
Okay, so
do that three times a day.
Animal protein, you'd be fine with fish and chicken.
Fish, chicken, red meat. Don't be afraid of eating red meat.
Okay, ham. We just did a nice bone ham. Okay, this is great. Thanks so much for your time, Pam.
Okay, good luck. You take care.
Thanks, Lynn.
Bye-bye.
Jennifer, let me get you on the air, and then can you take the question off the air? You want to hold on?
I can throw the question out there, and then I can just listen.
Okay, Pam, here's Jennifer up in Barrie.
Hi, Pam. I'm questioning about, you're talking about hormones and fertility. And speaking about the female eggs, we have them. We're born with the amount of eggs we have for our life. What can we do to keep them healthy?
Oh, that's a great question.
And what can we do to monthly, you know, eat, what can we eat? What can we take into, you know, when you're producing eggs, you're hoping to produce healthier eggs.
Yeah, that's the one thing you need, again, for that to happen is adequate amounts of animal fat. In particular, within the animal fat, vitamin A plays a key role in terms of the health of the ovary. So, you know, you want to make sure you're getting a lot of animal fat. When you see young girls today on a low-fat diet, or these young girls that are following that book that I absolutely can't stand, Skinny Bitch, that is teaching young girls or encouraging young girls to eat no animal fat, what you're going to see with these girls is they're going to move towards, they won't be able to ovulate. These poor girls are not going to be able to ovulate, and they will have troubles with fertility down the road unless they start going back to animal fats. And so for proper, for healthy ovulation, eat lots and lots of animal fat in your diet. Again, if you're of European descent, don't be afraid to eat as much as 70% of your calories from animal fat.
Jennifer, thanks for the question.
Thank you.
Great question. 10:50 is our time. Quick break in the program. One final segment coming up next with Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant. Today we're talking about hormones here on News Talk 610 CKTV. 10:53 is our time. Pam, during the break, I take a chance and I just Google, you know, let's see what, if I come up with dietary, ovarian health or pregnant eating to be fertile or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something from the Nurses Health Study that an everyday serving of full-fat dairy food, such as whole milk, ice cream, or cheddar cheese, increased a woman's chances of getting pregnant.
That's right. That was research that came out of Minnesota through Dr. Walter Willett, and it's one of these studies that comes out that goes against all conventional dietary thinking, because it's validating the fact that animal fats are crucial for fertility. And of course, that research ruffled a lot of feathers, because, you know, animal fats have been heavily demonized for 4, 5, 6 decades now, and yet that one research study that's relatively new goes against what the dietary dictocrats are telling us to do. So absolutely, that was a crucial study to help validate a lot of the points that I'm making.
That, you know what, when I have to be healthy. And what's interesting is that, you know what, we want to make sure that women, and especially, I guess, you know, Jennifer brought up an interesting thing. Well, trying to get pregnant as well. We also talk about, you know what, you should maybe make sure you have folic acid, enough folic acid in your system to prevent something like spina bifida. But I mean, even to get pregnant, you know, as she said, you know, what, how do you ensure that your eggs are healthiest? And then also, all, you know, what are the conditions to make sure you're at your most fertile for people who want to get pregnant? I mean, this.
Have I ever told you what the Native Indians used to do to make sure that they had healthy babies?
Wasn't it bear fat?
They diet high in bear fat. In native cultures like the Inuit, for example, even in Peru, primitive cultures there, they used to reserve the caviar, you know, the fish eggs.
Okay.
And the fish eggs were used as a sacred food because, again, they're high in cholesterol, they're high in vitamin A, vitamin D, you know, they're high in iodine, all of these key nutrients that actually will help support your fertility.
And one of the things I should point out, that cholesterol, you know, when you talk about, you know, cholesterol and dietary cholesterol, this is one of the precursors for sex hormones, that the body just can't manufacture it out of anything, that it needs cholesterol, and then through a series of steps can convert it into important hormones like estrogen or progesterone or testosterone, that a lot of people think, I get the misconception that no matter what I take in, magically, somewhere in my body, I can make anything. And that's just not the case.
No, that doesn't happen that way.
Yeah.
Definitely doesn't happen that way. There's one more food I want to mention before we finish, and that is iodine from things like seaweed, in particular things like kelp. And iodine, of course, is crucial for the proper functioning of your adrenals and your thyroid gland. And this is why so many of us across the world are trying to get fluoride out of our city water, is because it's a halogen which competes with our body's ability to use the element iodine. And that's why you're so lucky where you live, with that they've actually pulled fluoride out of the water. But one thing people can do to make sure they're getting adequate amounts of iodine in their diet is by taking or eating things like seaweed or kelp or what have you.
Now, what about iodized salt, though? Now that we add iodine to salt, is that a good way to get it, or you'd recommend another way?
That's not going to give you enough iodine to support your biochemistry. It's only going to give you enough to prevent goiter. But it's not going to really support your thyroid and your adrenal glands as well as it should at that quantity. So iodized salt, what you want from in terms of salt is you want a high-quality, unrefined sea salt, and it should be pink or gray in color. It shouldn't be refined at all. And then second to that, take something like kelp.
Kelp. All right. That's my new addition this week. I'll find a good place that serves a good kelp.
Good.
Have yourself a great week. I'll talk to you next Tuesday.
Next week, yeah.
Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, healthy living advocate. Eating right, especially for hormonal health, has been our focus this week. Thanks for all your questions as well. Take care, Pam.
Thanks so much, Tom. Take care.
News is next. My name's Tom O'Connell. When we come back, we'll talk about the debt crisis, the chicken wing index, and D.B. Cooper story back in the news. This is News Talk 610 CKTV.